Sat Sri Akal, Assalamualaikum, Namaste, and welcome. You are listening to the seventh show of A Woman's World. My name is Purvi Shah, and I'm excited to bring you a show about women's dreams and challenges facing our community. Though a majority of our world and leaders in our communities and homes, women's voices are often unheard. This show aims to change that. Each week, we delve into a new story of women making dreams come true. We hope to tap new experiences and create a ground for dialogue and change. As a poet and changemaker myself, I'm helping to create this ground. You can read more about my work in my own writing, including my book of poetry, Terrain Tracks, at purvipoets.net. That's PURVIPOETS.NET. Or follow me on Twitter at purvipoets. Our prior shows have focused on sexual violence, dance, improv, innovative community publishing, immigration reform, and youth organizing. Today, I'm excited to have you all with me as I speak with writer and author Rajika Bhandari. Welcome, Rajika, to A Woman's World.
Thank you, Purvi. Happy to be here.
So you recently just published a book, The Raj on the Move, and I would love to hear a little bit about what it felt like to have this book come out.
Well, it was very exciting, as I think it is for every writer, because you yourself are a writer, and you know that it's a challenging process and a long process of going from those first few words and to bringing together the ideas and then finally seeing this project actually in print. And so it's been, the last year has been very exciting. It took me about 5 years from start to finish. And it was a real joy to actually see it out and to be at bookstores in India and ask for the book and see it displayed on bookshelves.
I know, I love that feeling when you, something you worked on is out in the world and it's real. It's not just in your head anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
So the topic of the book is about the dak bungalows. What are they and what does the title mean, Raj on the Move?
So let me first start by talking about what the word dak means. And dak is a Hindi word for post. And the book is about a set of buildings that the British set up in India beginning in the 1840s. And it was basically a time when they had just arrived in India and were establishing their rule across the country and were beginning to really travel all over the country but had nowhere to stay or any way to deliver the mail. And it was the British who set up the system of mail in India, which actually continues to be one of the largest postal delivery systems in the world. And so they began to set up these buildings, which were modeled very much after some of the staging inns or post houses of Europe. And the idea was that travelers could go, or couriers delivering the mail could go on horseback from one building to the other and relay the mail. What happened over time was that British travelers, especially British officers, began to also use these buildings. And for people of a certain generation who've grown up in India, including my generation, have always heard of these buildings through our relatives, our uncles, our aunts, our parents, because these buildings still exist in India. They're known either as dak bungalows or circuit houses. And over time, they've just had this really interesting history attached to them. There's the whole notion of haunted dak bungalows. There's, in fact, a film called Dak Bangla, which is a horror film. And a lot of Ruskin Bond stories, Kipling, and a lot of his ghost stories are all set against the backdrop of these buildings.
And so there seems like there's this whole literary context, as well as colonial history that is part of this building structure or system.
Absolutely. And also a third element, a lot of local folklore. So I became very interested in these buildings because I had stayed in many of them as a child and while growing up, and really began to wonder what had been written about them, because we, of course, have a lot of literature around all of the other amazing British architecture in India, but really nothing had been written about these buildings, which are very fascinating in their own way. So that's what led me down this path.
So how old were you the first time you stayed in one of the dak bungalows?
Probably about 10 or 11.
And what did you remember? What was it like? How did you end up there?
I ended up there because I was accompanying my mother. She was doing a lot of work with some women's NGOs. Mm. And we were traveling to some very remote areas in Madhya Pradesh where there really weren't any hotels to speak of. And that's still the case in many remote parts of India where you really don't have commercial establishments. And it's either your options are usually a government-run guest house. So I remember that one of the common themes in a lot of these buildings was that there was usually always a very old cook who had been there for many, many years. And there were often a lot of local stories about the building, many of which are also included in my book.
So when you were 10 or 11 and staying in this kind of bungalow for the first time, did you feel like there were a presence of like other people, or did it feel like haunting to you, or was it more just a fun adventure?
There's certainly an eerie quality about the buildings, also because of their location, because some of the really spectacular buildings are often located in very isolated areas, either deep within a forest or often high on a hilltop. And the reason for that is that when the British began to build some of these, they wanted to really sort of remove themselves from the natives. So they really chose what was the choicest spot in that area, high on a hill with, you know, the best scenery or the best views,
so they can like look out and kind of survey all the property in some ways.
Yes,
far away from the madding crowd, as
absolutely,
it were.
And look out over the village beneath and where their subjects were, so to speak. So they certainly have a very eerie quality about them.
So then you had this experience when you were very young, but did you know at that point that you were going to be a writer?
I think I always wanted to be a writer. I did not ever imagine I would write a book about dark bungalows. That I think came for me much later on. And interestingly, my interest in these buildings and actually my interest in Indian history and architecture in general, I think became more heightened once I moved to the US as a young graduate student. And I think that's what the process of migration often does, that it really heightens your awareness of your own history, your own culture in a way that's very different from if you were continuing to live in your own culture. So, yeah, I always have wanted to be a writer and always wrote a lot, even as a child. But I think the Dark Bungalow book was a very interesting departure for me.
That's so interesting. I love what you're saying about that sense of claiming or understanding your roots when you've left, you know, and that sense we often talk about the nostalgia that immigrants often have for their homelands, which often change so much in the time that they're away. But how is it that, so you had this experience coming here and then recognizing this rich history back home, but how did you actually make the decision that you wanted to really take this long process of research? Or you probably didn't imagine it was going to take 5 years when you started it.
Yes, I didn't imagine it would take 5 years. And I guess I'm fortunate that the book has a very historical element to it. So we could sort of extend the history by a few years, because really the book spans, in terms of the time period, it spans the 1800s through post-independence India. So I became very interested in these buildings and really wanted to uncover this aspect of India's history, and history not just in the sense of historical events, but also really a social history of these buildings. Because, as I said earlier, there are all these really interesting local stories of hauntings and other local happenings tied to these buildings. And the book took 5 years, also because, as you know, I'm not a full-time writer, I also dabble in some other work, but there was the fieldwork part of it, where once I really came up with the plan of what I wanted to cover in the book, it took a few years to strategically and deliberately visit these buildings across India. And so I really wanted to cover the full spectrum of these buildings, because the ones in North India, for example, are very different from the ones in Central India, and different from the ones in South India. So I really wanted to try and at least have a sample of all of those. So there was the actual field work and the travel that happened over a couple of years. And then there was a lot of archival research that went into this book, and that actually took place right here in the New York Public Library archives.
That's amazing. So you could find all these documents related to India right here in New York City.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big challenges for me in setting out to do this book was the challenges, but also the really exciting aspect for any writer, I think, is when you know that nothing's ever been done on that subject before. But it's also challenging, because then you have to figure out where you're going to obtain the information. So because nothing had ever been written about these buildings, I had to go back to the absolute original source, which really included a lot of the travel journals and memoirs of British men and women who lived in India and who were traveling across India right from the late 1700s. And I pored through over 100 of these very old journals of Mem Sahibs who had been posted in India, who had accompanied their husband who was posted in India, who were living in small towns, who were traveling to hills, who were staying in these buildings, and what their experiences were. And it was through all of that archival research that I was really able to very slowly piece together how these buildings had existed a couple of centuries ago and what the experience of travelers had been when they stayed in these buildings.
That's amazing. So when you were at the Public, what are these journals, the actual journals that the British folks had, or were they collections of the journal writings? Did you actually get to like touch these, you know, 1800s journals, or were they compiled together?
No, these are the original works.
What did they look like? What do they smell like?
They are very old, very frayed, and which is why they're all reference works. I remember while sitting there and reading them, I also went through this phase where there was a real, almost visceral longing for India, because a lot of these travelogues covered northern India and the hills, because one of the traditional aspects of the British summer in India was an annual migration to the hills. Because every time the summer set in, the families would basically pack up and migrate to the hills. And that's what led to the formation of what in the subcontinent are known as hill stations, that many of us are familiar with and we visited. And Shimla is perhaps the most famous of them and was also the summer capital. And I actually spent part of my formative years in that very region, in the Himalayan foothills. So just reading about all these experiences really brought back for me my own time there as a child. And what was very exciting was to also read the memoirs, actually, of, for example, the high school that I went to in India was founded by a Britisher named Henry Lawrence and his wife, Honoria Lawrence. And actually, she was one of the more prolific writers of that time. So it was pretty amazing after so many years to be sitting in New York Public Library and reading her experiences of traveling in that region.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see how these people who are colonizers then still have this legacy that was so visceral in your life in some ways, where you went to school or, you know, where you also spent time. That's amazing. So how many of the bungalows did you visit? Do you remember in your journeys from north to south? How many did you end up actually staying at?
Just over about 20 of them. And 20 in total. And I would say that if I were to include the ones I've visited over time, even the ones that weren't sort of deliberately picked to be part of my travels for the book, I would say I've probably visited a total of about 30.
And what do you feel like was the strangest or weirdest thing that happened when you were staying at one of these bungalows?
I would say it was not a particular incident, but more one of the sort of circuit, and some of them are they're known as dak bungalows or circuit houses, was one in a town in central India called Damoh. And there was something very eerie about this building. It was it's made of it dates back to the 1800s, and it's made of a very dark stone, and just has a very dark and gothic air about it. And by the time we reached there, so it was sort of more the atmosphere of the place. And when we got there, the sun was just setting, and when we got there, this gentleman came out to meet us, and his name was Mr. Qureshi, and his father used to be the khansama, or cook there, cook at this building. And so he had all these stories about the building, and the setting sun had sort of cast this orange glow to the dark stone of the building. And here was Mr. Qureshi telling us about how this building still continues to be haunted.
And did you want to turn the other direction and go back?
We did. We did want to do exactly that. And apparently there are stories about how one of the major suites in the circuit house still continues to be haunted, and that haunted by a couple that have been haunting this building since the 1800s.
And you just can't get the British out.
No, we can't get the British out. But apparently that's what this couple had tried to do. Apparently they were an Indian couple, and they did not like the idea of British visitors. And then the story goes on that there was General Douglas and his family who stayed there. And then, under very mysterious circumstances, the general shot his entire family and himself, and that had something to do with the hauntings. And then what's very strange is that the circuit house staff told us that that particular spot on top of the hill tends to attract people with suicidal tendencies, and you often find bodies hanging from the trees. Are you getting goosebumps?
I just can't believe you actually... Did you stay in this house afterwards?
We did not. We did not stay. We did not stay. But my mother had... my mother needed to use the ladies' room, and it just so happened that the suite that was unlocked, because they didn't have any visitors at that time, so they unlocked one of the suites for us, was indeed the one that was supposed to be haunted. And she was very nervous going into the bathroom by herself, and she made me stand guard outside the door. So suffice it to say that there was a very real sense of this being a haunted place.
And luckily you survived.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm here to tell the tale.
So we are going to continue to hear from Rajika about her book, The Raj on the Move, as well as some other work. But right now we're going to take a short commercial break, and then we'll be right back.